The Centurions by Damien Hunter and read by Andrew Kingston for Saga Egmont. Prologue. He was called Coreus, after a chieftain of his mother's people in the old days, and he was conceived in a tent in a marching camp between Syria and Rome. His father was a professional soldier, Appius Julianus, legate of the 10th Legion Fratensis, urgently recalled to Rome by the Emperor Claudius in that ruler's last days. His mother's name was Helva, and she was 17, bought as a slave after a minor rebellion in Gallia Belgica some 2 years before. As a mistress, she was entirely satisfactory. As a companion to a man who suddenly found himself up to his ears in the Emperor's business, she became a liability, and he installed her among his young wife's waiting women. Before he returned to the Emperor, his wife had also conceived. Appius Julianus did his best for the aging Emperor, but in the end it did little good. Claudius died amid whispers of poison, and Appius Julianus wisely made his peace with Nero, the Emperor's great nephew and successor. He then returned to his legion in Syria, which was about as far away from that unstable prince as he could get, and resumed his career with his beloved army. Behind him, he left two sons, half-brothers, born within an hour of each other, and each a dark side shadow image of the other. Chapter 1. The Gods of New Ventures. By the time they were 17, the physical likeness between them was uncanny. But the likeness in the soul was a dark, dimly sensed bond, and more often than not, a tie that chafed where it was felt. Coreus, feet braced against the chariot floor behind a team of his father's ponies, sought to shake off the feeling that had clung to him all day, and wondered if Flavius felt it too. The sensation had grown even stronger in the 2 years since their famous father had come home to retirement. And today, there was something more than that in the wind. The grey ponies came into the turn, heads high, tails frisking in impatience against the tight rein. The light training chariot swung into the straight, and he leaned forward. "Now, fly, you devils!" The ponies lengthened their stride, and his dark eyes narrowed against the wind and sunlight under the rim of his helmet. The helmet was ancient army issue, stripped of its crest and insignia, and he had balked at wearing it 4 years ago when he had first begun to drive, protesting indignantly that it made his ears hot. "I'll make your backside hot if I catch you with it off again," old Deulius had said, jamming the helmet down over Coreus's brown hair. "Little good it'll do you to split your head open like a melon before you've learned not to overturn yourself on a curve." Deulius had driven a chariot himself once in the Circus Maximus at Rome, and his word was law on the training track, even for the sons of the master. So Coreus had worn his helmet, and now it seemed as much a part of him as the bones of his skull, although he still pulled it off occasionally, when Deulius's watchful eyes were turned elsewhere, for the sheer pleasure of the wind in his hair. The ponies swept past the painted arm of the starting pole, and Deulius dropped the hand with which he had been methodically beating time on the fence rail. "The best yet. That is a team. Tomorrow we'll try them against young Flavius, and see how his blacks like being passed." "Nay then, hold off a day or two, and don't go stirring the waters just yet," the man beside him said. He nodded toward the far ring where Flavius was putting a bay horse through its paces, weaving in and out through a line of upright poles. Deulius spat through the gap left after one of his teeth had remained behind with a broken chariot in the sands of the circus. "Typhon, take it. They aren't a pair of fighting cocks. I can't keep them apart forever. You let them train together yourself. It's natural." The other man, Alan, was a time-expired veteran of the cavalry auxiliaries and master of the horses that the estate sold to the army as remounts.
"And when they do work together, 9 times out of 10, young Coreus shows the better, and the young master looks fit to split his gut. I'm telling ye, Deulius, let it bide for now."